We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Mully and Hall, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
The focus is on the quarterback position. It's been a focus for us with the addition of Nick Foles. It's exactly what we talked about from the start. We've increased competition at a critical position, and we talked to both players, and the way we view this is it's an open competition. And credit to both those guys for embracing it.
I can promise you this. It's going to be completely fair. It's going to be extremely competitive in a good way. It's going to be a healthy competitiveness. And, you know, in the end for us, it's going to be a collaboration of what we all feel. And I think that's all that those guys really ask for and want as competitors.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to have some information from the Bears and to understand how they're looking at things. We don't know when the season resumes or when the offseason gets going, but we certainly know that when they get on the field, you heard the coach say it, that Mitch will get that first start and, get that first snap, of the first drill. But I don't know that he gets much beyond that, David. I think if it is an open competition, I just have a hard time remembering back to camp last year and some of the struggles with the quarterback. And that was all chalked up to, oh, look how good our defense is. Boy, the defense is going to be good. And the quarterback not too good.
The fact that Mitch will get the first snap in terms of the first practice, whenever it is protocol. It's respect. It's the way things are done in sports. He is the incumbent. And I think that you want to, at least provide the idea or maybe project the idea that there's some sort of experience matters and the new guy's not going to be given anything without having earned it. And that is the oldest thing in sports. But let's face it here. Nick Foles is more accomplished. Nick Foles is more expensive. And Nick Foles will be given every opportunity to fail, I think. You're not going to get somebody to approve a crazy restructure of his contract. Something that will, force him to... It's all funny money to us, and he's guaranteed $21 million. But his base salary is really slashed. And he had to agree to all these things with incentives in his deal. And he's not going to do that. He's not going to do that, Mully, unless there's some sort of assurance that he was given that, you're going to be our guy. This is a system that you can succeed in. We have seen you operate this offense before. So while I heard everything that you heard on Friday, they're going to, give Mitch an opportunity. It is an open competition. I'm not sure how open it really is.
Yeah, and look, I mean, the fact that he gets the first snap, to me, irrelevant. It doesn't have anything to do. You're just taking a snap, man. Enjoy that. Enjoy that and feel good about it. Look, I think that there's a lot of us that have seen enough and that feel like they've got to upgrade this position. And guess what? I'd include the guy at Hallis Hall, the head coach, in that. I don't know about the general manager. He sounded like it was a competition. I agree with you, David. I don't think Nick Foles comes in here if he doesn't believe he's going to be the starter, and I don't know that he signs here, and I know they traded for him, but I don't know if he's willing to do what he's done if he doesn't believe that there's going to be a fair shot. And I agree. I think they probably had to tell him, you're the man. You're going to be the guy. I look at this competition, and I haven't heard anyone, and I'm talking about all the people I know, all the people I talked to over the weekend, all the people that inquired of my opinion after this thing happened. I don't know anyone that really felt, oh boy, Mitch is going to beat out Foles and this is going to turn his career. I think it is wacky, but the fact is that Mitch has gone from being this sort of coddled favorite at the position, overdrafted guy, to now he's an underdog. You know, they asked him about the contract again, whether they're going to pick up the option. All picking up the option means is that you can make it, you're putting the decision off to next year. They picked up the option on Leonard Floyd, and then they got rid of him. It's not a big deal to pick up the option. It's a huge deal to not pick up the option. And they weren't, at that point anyway, willing to pick up the option.
Ryan Pace says, as we go through that, it's something we're not going to comment on right now. We'll discuss it when we get closer to that point. Okay, we're a month out from the deadline, Molly, and as you point out, there's really nothing to be gained, and there's really no level of commitment that you're making as a franchise when you pick up that fifth-year option. But the symbolism is undeniable if you don't, and that is a show of no confidence. It's a public show of no confidence, which is what, to me, this entire offseason has been. And I think we all agree, it's about time. It's about time. And I like the way, though, I like the way that Nick Foles has handled this. He's coming in and he's very, very adamant that he wants the best is for the Bears, not for himself. And he did make a phone call and he did reach out to Mitch Trubisky. So even if it's insincere, and I don't think that it is, but he's doing things the way that you should do them if you are a new guy coming in to take somebody's job.
David, and you know, we talked to the author of Nick Foles' book and we got a lot of pushback from some of the comments he made, because whenever someone expresses anything about religion and sports, it drives people absolutely crazy. And there is a certain, you know, kind of element of skepticism or cynicism that comes out of the woodwork whenever you're talking about religion and sports. It is a very strange reality. And I believe you said this term, but his religion gives him a swagger. I believe that was a direct quote from something you said. I can't remember if it was on the air or off the air when we talked about this. But I got to tell you, that guy is a true believer. And he lives his life in a certain way because of everything that's happened to him, because of his faith and all this stuff. I think that comes across. I think this is a good guy. I think he's a decent bloke. And I think he's coming into a tough situation, and he knows it's tough for Mitch, and he makes a phone call because that's the kind of person he is. And when you hear Matt Nagy talk about him, that is sort of the kind of level that he holds this guy, the way he likes this guy so much, because, and it's why he's a good teammate, because he's coming in to compete. He's coming in, he's taking this job, but he's also aware that there's another person. He's been through these kind of battles, and he reaches out and he wants it to be a friendly competition because he knows they're all in it together. And you know, there's a lot of us that are bad, poor competitors, that were poor sports, good winners, terrible losers, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that this guy has got his life in really good perspective. I can't tell you how impressed I was listening to that conference call with this guy.
I don't know that he could have. Yeah, he couldn't have been any more impressive. 30 minutes. He won the teleconference, if you can do such a thing these days. He won the Zoom conference, I'm sure, as well. But what you're referring to, Nick Foles has an emotional maturity that I think is welcome in any locker room, but especially here in this city where, frankly, I mean, you've been waiting for Mitch to take that step, and that's a kind of an unfair comparison, but these are the two guys who's are going to be competing for this job, and you're exactly right, and I think that his faith does give him somewhat of a swagger. It's not a brand of leadership that's for everyone. Nobody's going to say that. You have to be very careful on how you espouse your beliefs and what, you know, how you project that in a locker room, in a meeting room, anywhere. But the things that I think are true about Nick Foles is that it comes through whether you meet him in person or on the phone. Things happen for a reason to him. He really believes that. And second to that, and this is rooted in his faith, nothing is going to happen to him, whether it's on the field on Sunday or during the season and getting replaced or whatever. Nothing's going to happen to him that he doesn't feel like he can handle, because he's, you know, been to the bottom. He almost left football. He feels like that was the low point. And ever since that point, he's had a change in perspective, and that's refreshing. And it's also necessary for the Bears at this point in their development, because they need a guy that can take over and not be fazed by anything.
Yeah, I really agree with everything you're saying. I thought he did very well on that conference call. I think that, you know, when he said, when he talked about everyone staying safe, I mean, just little things that he did that are sincere things from the guy. And it's the kind of thing you don't expect it from people, let's put it that way. But it's a thoughtfulness that not everybody would aspire to. But I was super impressed by that guy. He clearly a good dude. You know, I told you I read that book, you know, I'm not a God squatter necessarily. I know, and I'm just using that term, but I also don't mind it. I don't care if somebody wants to express their faith. That's something that is their business. I get it. People don't want to be hit over the head with it. But, I mean, Tim Tebow, you know, what's wrong with Tim Tebow? There's nothing wrong with the guy. He's a decent guy. He's tried to do good in his life. And people deride him because, oh, he's a goody two-shoes. Like, so what? Who cares? Does everyone have to be the bad boy?
No, it's a form of expression. And I think that's the one thing you have to respect. Some people express themselves in different ways. And this is his brand of leadership. Not for everybody, but works for him. And this is what you get when you bring in Nick Foles into your organization. And I think there's a lot to like.
312-644-6767. Let's talk about some of the specifics of the quarterback competition. How do you go about holding a legitimate quarterback competition? Is that what the plan is? And we'll discuss it next. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
I think when, you know, ultimately, like when I step into the huddle, like I said, it's about like that family atmosphere. It's about loving your teammates and caring. But with that, it's when you get into the game, being able to read, react, and play the game and feel the whole team and how you got to play. If I need to throw for close to 500 yards and 4 touchdowns, we'll do it. If for some reason it's going to take us running the ball well and me throwing an efficient 150 yards, I'll do it with 0 touchdowns. It doesn't matter. And then also the checks, whether it be, you know, changing a concept, altering a route, talking to the guys about different things on the sidelines, being a leader by serving, by doing what's best for the team.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's a little taste of Nick Foles during his conference call. He is coming in to compete with Mitchell Trubisky. And, you know, I'm very curious to know how that competition works, because I would wonder, David, if Mitch has ever really been in a quarterback competition. I know Matt Nagy said that Mitch is such a competitor that it's going to bring out the best in him, but, you know, this is a guy that didn't start until senior year in college and was kind of a one-hit wonder at North Carolina before being overall. And you look at did he have a chance to compete with Mike Glennon? I know he took over that job, but we know how awful Glennon was. He hasn't been tested. I don't know when he's been tested. I don't know. Back to high school, because, you know, conversely, you can look at Nick Foles and you can say, well, he lost some quarterback competitions over the course of his career. Now, he ended up starting over Michael Vick at one point.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how to judge it.
Well, I judge it this way. You know, Nick Foles will do what he's asked to do. And I think you have some – obviously, last year was an aberration. And I think last year it's easy to excuse because of the injury he suffered so early in the season. It kind of made it abnormal. I don't want to dismiss that, but I think you have to factor that in. All that we know that Nick Foles, you know, when he talks about what he's capable of doing, we know that he's capable of being asked to lead a team in a playoff setting on the road against a very good defense to a touchdown drive to win the game. And we know he can do that because we saw it in Chicago. And we saw it in the 16-15 victory of the Eagles over the Bears when he led the Eagles 60 yards in 12 plays against a defense that was protecting a lead in the fourth quarter at home. And Mully, Nick Foles is a guy who has earned a reputation for being a clutch performer, whether it's being the Super Bowl MVP or the example I just cited. This is a guy who has come up big in big moments. That, to me, is something that gives him a clear-cut advantage over a guy who has not necessarily won any quarterback competition that we can recall. You know, he's not really had to be in those situations. And that's a product maybe of Mitch Trubisky's youth and inexperience. But you know, you trust what you know. And we know that Nick Foles has been through something like this before and come out on top.
Yeah, no question about that. And I think it comes down to one thing, David. I mean, look, if you start the season with Mitch, it's going to be hard for him to win this job. If you start the season with Mitch and they go 3-and-out, and we saw a lot of 3-and-out in that offense, I don't know how the crowd responds to him, right? I mean, I remember when Dave Wannstedt came in and they had Jim Harbaugh and they were in a preseason game. It was like the third preseason game or something. And the crowd was booing and going absolutely, you know, anti-Jim Harbaugh before they even started. And Wannstedt was looking around and he said, how do you have a chance? How do you have a chance if the crowd's already made its opinion known? And I wonder how the crowd is going to respond to Mitch versus Nick Foles. I wonder if there's going to be like this sort of cheering, just a sense of relief almost when Foles is on the field as opposed to watching something happen with Mitch. And listen, if Mitch plays well, I think the crowd's behind him, but I just wonder about it.
I don't know that Mitch Trubisky is going to keep up the tradition of being the most popular guy in town as the backup quarterback. I just don't think that's going to be the case because there's a lot of Trubisky fatigue. And I think that, you know, this is, we're all have been waiting for this moment. And I guess from this moment, meaning it's sort of a recognition of, and I think you mentioned it and they played it, you mentioned it Friday and they played it coming into to our show today. He's seeing what we're seeing. The Bears are watching what we've been watching, and it's not good enough. And they've come to that conclusion. I also just like the fact that Nick Foles, you know, I referenced the Eagles game. How about what he said about how lucky, and I guess maybe fortunate would be the better word, not necessarily lucky, they felt after the double doink, and how he felt like he sat in his locker, and he just felt that was as difficult of an accomplishment and a difficult of a defense as he's faced in his entire career, and they felt like they got away with something there after Cody Parkey's miss made the Eagles the winner in the playoff game. I thought that was funny. He just hit all the right notes on Friday, Mully, and is a guy who didn't seem like he would be too big for the job, for any job here.
I got to tell you, I mean, that was one of the things, whether he was playing to the crowd or being sincere, you loved hearing him talk about that in that fashion. About, you know, he said, I think, you know, we know they could have gone to the Super Bowl. That team was so good and that defense was so tough. It was just perfect. It's just what people want to hear. There's nothing wrong with saying what the crowd wants. I mean, give the audience what they need. 312-644-6767. That is the telephone number. And David, you know, let's talk about just the mechanics of a quarterback competition. I mean, are we, and I know we've all been there, we've all been through these camps where you're charting every throw and you're trying to figure out who's done better and how this guy did on a particular day. Do you think it's going to be like that, or do you think it's more you just know it when you see it, more or less?
I think it's going to be something that you know it when you see it. I think that when you talk about dividing reps and charting passes and gauging practices, sure, go ahead. I'm glad that Matt Nagy seems to have relented. And if there is a preseason, both guys will play and they'll get a kind of a glimpse of what you have. I think it'll be obvious. And Nick Foles might be a little rusty. He might be a little bit of this or that because he's adjusting to new teammates. But I think what you'll see is something that we heard. I think you'll see a presence. And the one thing that I think raises questions about this is no matter how they divide up the opportunities or the snaps or whatever, or the series, when they play what quarter, that there's a presence that will help the offense function because it will remove the anxiety. And not that the Bears operated with, you know, anxiety every time that Mitch was at quarterback, but there seemed to be a tempo issue. There seemed to be like they always had to speed things up before he would become more comfortable. And I don't think that Matt Nagy was ever really comfortable with that. I think what you'll see is somebody running the show, driving the car in a way that makes the ride more comfortable for everybody.
All right, let's get to the phone lines. 312-644-6767. We'll start with Matt's in River North. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Oh, we lost Matt. Damn it. It's my fault. I'm
literally
sorry,
Matt. Right when you were speaking, he dropped off.
Yeah, well, what was Matt? Matt was not exactly in Nick Foles' camp.
Matt was going to take a shot. No. He thinks Nick Foles is soft, he said. Now, let me ask something. Of all the terms you can use, is it because the guy, you know, lost his passion for football after a couple of rough stops? Is that it? He goes to the Rams and it's not much of a competition and he doesn't feel like he gets much of a opportunity. And he just needs to take a break. He says in his book that he had money coming to him from the Rams, and he told his agent, "I just want to get out of here." And the agent's like, "Well, what are you willing to take?" And he said, "I'm willing to just get out of here." He just wanted his freedom, and he left, you know, some millions on the table because he couldn't face playing for that team again. And then he ends up getting a phone call from Andy Reid, and he thinks it through, and he goes on the hunting trip and all that stuff, or the fishing trip, whatever it was. And then he comes back and decides that, I'm going to give this a shot. And that's when he really hooks up with Matt Nagy, who was the offensive coordinator at the point, and he ends up doing okay for himself.
Matt seems to be back. He wants to make his point for himself and speak for himself. So, Matt from River North. Good morning, Matt.
No, I don't think Nick Foles is soft. My point was, Nick Foles, you know, you're talking about him being a very religious guy. This is the first I've heard of it. I think my point is, Derek Carr is a very religious guy, and he's very preachy. Gruden doesn't like him. Gruden thinks Derek Carr is soft. He's come out and said that. He's rubbed his teammates the wrong way by preaching to him and things like that. And it's, you know, the Raiders, you know, being a Raiders fan.
That's not, Gruden thinks everybody's soft.
Is more of a leader than Derek Carr. I think, you know, obviously he's accomplished more. So I think you can be that way, but, you know, you do it in a respectful way. You don't preach to everybody. Brady Quinn doesn't think much of Tim Tebow, if you ever read about what he thinks about him. You know, and I have a lot of respect for Brady Quinn. He thinks Tim Tebow's a bit of a phony. You know, he says he prays every time he sees a camera. And that's documented. I just think that certain coaches don't like that. But I've never heard Nick Foles talk about like Tebow talks. I think Nick Foles is a great leader, and he proved it on the field.
Well, yeah, Nick Foles did prove it on the field, and I think that is the essential difference here. I mean, Mo, you were talking about how Nick Foles came back from the depths of, you know, not knowing whether he wanted to continue playing. See, he has crossed the bridge that I think Mitch Trubisky is just now facing. You know, every professional athlete or every professional, they have that point in their career where it's a pivot point. You're either going to respond or you're going to get crushed, right? And your progress is going to stop. And I think Nick Foles responded to that with joining the Chiefs and starting to climb back. And then he ended up with the Super Bowl MVP, and now here he is in Chicago. Mitch hasn't been there yet, and I think maybe this is it for him. Maybe this is where he's going to have to decide the crossroads of his career. Which direction are you going to go? How are you going to handle this? I made the point that, to me, the presence of Nick Foles, the example that he sets, whether it's intentional or not, that mentorship can help Mitch Trubisky become a better NFL quarterback, whether he plays one game or 15 games. The presence and influence of Nick Foles will help Mitch kind of grow up professionally as a quarterback.
I think there's a huge difference between a guy having a lot of faith and a guy that's proselytizing. And I don't believe that. I mean, I was in the locker room when the Champions for Christ stuff was going on. I remember that distinctly when, you know, the whole thing happened with the running back, but it was also the guard came in from Jacksonville where there was like a lot of Bible study going on and they started doing a lot of stuff. And, you know, I sat down and talked to a couple of these guys about their questions about, you know, t- taking Jesus as your personal savior. I remember Bernstein was in the locker room, was very offended by that stuff. It's part of some religions, proselytizing, where you're supposed to be out recruiting at all times. I don't know. I've never seen Nick Foles do that sort of thing. I don't think he's doing that in the locker room. And I think people learn quickly that's not something that, you know, I don't have any problem with someone talking to me about religion. I let them know my feelings about it, and that's the end of it. But I guess some people are offended. I don't know. I wouldn't get caught up in it, that's for sure.
I don't think it's been a big issue with Foles.
No,
I don't think it's
not at all.
It's not something to make something out of. No, not.
No, it's ridiculous. All right, we're gonna bring in Casey Johnson. The Bulls are making moves. The Bulls are gonna be talking to people, and we'll bring in KC. We'll talk about the timing of this. Is this the original timetable? How quickly do they want to move? And his thoughts on the candidates that are out there. We'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Banks it in!
KC Johnson.
Come and get some of this.
Bulls basketball.
Whoa! Stop it! Stop it!
Taking you inside the locker room with KC Johnson.
Oh, my goodness. Did you not get the memo?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. KC Johnson joins us on the Al Pamani Ford Hotline. Al Pamani Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, KC. How are you?
Morning, KC.
What's up, guys? How you doing?
We're doing great, and we're not doing as well as the Bulls. They're making moves, buddy. You're all over this story. Does this surprise you in any fashion? Was this the original timetable around the beginning of April?
My understanding is that they would plan to do this once the regular season ended, and obviously, you know, with the NBA calendar all out of rhythm, they've pushed it up a little bit. You know, they originally waited after the hiatus out of, you know, sensitivity to the situation and the unprecedented nature of the situation. Plus, they were busy just trying to figure out what the hell was going on, like everybody else. So, but, you know, Michael Reinsdorf has been, you know, gathering intelligence and doing due diligence on a wide variety of candidates for a long period of time. It didn't start over All-Star Weekend. I know that's when Joe Kelly from the Sun-Times first wrote that story, and mine appeared a little bit later. You know, saying that that's kind of when it was happening, because that's when there was so much talk about it, because the whole league was in town then. And basically everywhere I went that weekend, someone from another team or an agent or what have you said, hey, man, the Bulls are out there, man. But he's been doing this for a long time. So he's been ready. He's had a, you know, list he's had for a while. He's you know, researched a lot of these guys, and now they're just moving into the phase where they're starting to ask teams for permission to interview them.
So, KC, four reported candidates. Chad Buchanan from the Pacers does not want to interview. He's going to stay in Indy for reasons that seem to be related to his relationship with Kevin Pritchard. But thumbnail sketches of the three other guys: Arturas Karnišovas from the Nuggets, the general manager there; Bobby Webster, the youngest GM in the league at 35, the assistant who is with the Raptors; and then Adam Simon, the assistant GM for the Heat.
Yeah, I also should say, before I give thumbnail sketches on those guys, I would not just, the list is bigger than that. And I wrote, you know, I know I focus on those four names like some other people did, but I wrote that the list is, you know, I mentioned some other names, Utah's Justin Zanuck. I mentioned Magic's Matt Lloyd. This list is evolving. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if some of these other three you just mentioned that I'll give thumbnail sketches on, they also didn't get to interview them. I mean, these guys, you know, people can say they're number twos, but they're really, you know, they're under a number one, but they basically do the same job they'd be doing in Chicago for better teams. So also, these guys are really respected by their organizations. Pat Riley loves Adam Simon. He's a native Miami guy. He's been there 25 years, worked his way up from the video room like Eric Spoelstra did. I wouldn't be surprised if some of these teams like Miami or Toronto don't even give permission to the Bulls to interview them. So this list will evolve. This list will grow, is my guess. but, you know, I gave a brief one there on Simon. You know, Webster and Karnisovas are both widely respected throughout the league. You mentioned Webster's the youngest GM in the league. He's a really interesting guy. He started with the league office, really, really young, bright, relationship builder. And then Karnisovas is just, you know, he's one of these guys who's got strong connections internationally, obviously, from his Lithuanian background with a national team there, played at Seton Hall, you know, has done a really nice job with Tim Connolly out in Denver building that team, been instrumental in some big moves there. So, look, one person I talked to from another team that's, you know, not on the list and, you know, is actually number one with another team was saying that, that's a great list they've got. I mean, they've targeted the right people. It's just whether or not they're going to get to interview these guys because they're pretty well respected from their franchises.
So what is the job exactly and what is the appeal to it and how much power will that person have?
Yeah, that's a good question, Molly. I mean, I think some people will probably disagree with this. I know fans are incredibly disgruntled with this franchise right now. I think me personally, and then I will also say some reporting I've done for a piece that's going to be coming up on NBCSportsChicago.com. I don't think it's a good job. I think it's a great job. You've got a major market here, obviously, in Chicago. You've got the history and tradition of the franchise. You've got clean books going into 2021. You got all your first-round draft picks. You've got some of the best facilities in the entire league. The Advocate Center is just spectacular. It really is. The United Center and, you know, the Bulls and Blackhawks do a great job of keeping that building up. The roster has got some intriguing pieces. It's not a great roster, but it's not a bad roster. I mean, you can say what you want about John Paxson and Gar Forman. Even their biggest critic, I think, if you put them on a lie detector test, would say they've drafted well. And, you know, you haven't had much lottery luck lately, but Wendell Carter Jr. and Kobe White at number 7 both look like nice young pieces. I know Markkanen has regressed this year. I think he's very salvageable. I think everybody would argue that everybody would agree that Zach LaVine took a step this year. So I think this roster has actually got decent potential. It's still a ways away. You're still in a rebuild. It's not easy to exit a rebuild, but I think it's a very, very attractive job. And the other reason I think it's an attractive job is you're going to be given the keys to the kingdom. This is full authority to make basketball decisions. This is the number one job. John will be around. We all know how much the Reinsdorfs like and value him, but you know, John's not going to be hovering. That's not who John is. You guys know John. He wants what's best for the Bulls. He will not be hovering. So this person, whoever they hire, will be allowed to bring in additional staff, is my understanding. So they're going to be able to build out this infrastructure the way he sees fit. So I think this is a really good job, and that's why it's critical the Bulls get this hire right.
Casey, you know the school of thought that there needs to be a young, hip executive that can appeal to free agents and relate to players on a level that some executives, especially executives with the Bulls, have not been able to do. Dwayne Wade was on Twitter kind of lobbying for the job. I don't know if that was serious or not, but my sense is it probably was. And then Mark Cuban says that Michael Finley, who's in the front office with the Mavericks, would be a really good choice, a smart decision if the Bulls wanted to go that direction. To your knowledge, are either of those two guys under serious consideration, or would that make any sense?
Well, first of all, I would say that I completely 1,000% agree with your original point. This league now, we all know, it's about player empowerment, and it's about relationships and consensus building and connections. That's what this entire league is about, and the Bulls are behind in that department, quite frankly, and they know it. So I completely agree with that, and I know that they're aware of that, so that's why I think some of these candidates are rated very highly in those departments. And speaking specifically to those candidates, I've never heard either name. Maybe I missed a tweet. I personally read Dwayne Wade's tweet as him pumping for Adam Simon from the Heat. I don't know. I talked to somebody who suggested that that's the way they thought what Dwayne was meaning with that tweet. Are you talking about when you said I know a guy or something like that?
Yeah, that one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was talking about Adam Simon there.
Okay, good.
That's
a relief.
Yeah, but look, your overall point is a good one, and this is what I think the additional hires thing should not be lost. This is no small detail. So, like, let's say they hire whoever they hire, and that person comes in and they get like a young former player who's a rising executive, like a Nazi Muhammad or a Shane Battier or something in place. I think that's important. I absolutely think that's important. Or Michael Finley, whose name I have not heard, but I mean, those are just examples. Mike Dunleavy would be another one. You need somebody in there, beyond the number one guy to do this right. So I think there's a lot of validity to that.
It's a long list, and obviously it extends beyond these names, as you said. Does that mean that they're going to take their time with this? Is there, if they can move quickly, is there an advantage to getting these hires going and getting up and started? And, you know, if you want to bring in a certain scout or a certain type of system, wouldn't it be better off to kind of get it going and feel pretty good about things before you start making decisions?
100%, and that's why this is actually an opportunity with the obviously crazy and unprecedented situation we're all living in right now. They're starting the process now, I can't give you a timeline. I don't think they have a timeline other than the fact that they're starting the process. So, you know, they're starting the interview process this week. So we all know how interviews go. I mean, they're going to get their interviews done, and then they're going to make a decision. So my sense is, I'm not reporting this, this is my sense, this is going to happen sooner rather than later. And that's a good thing, because then you have that opportunity to then start building out the staff and building out the infrastructure. You also have an opportunity, as David mentioned last week when I was on with you guys, if there is a resumption of play for 1920, which I personally, again, not reporting, just my personal vibe, I personally do not think is going to happen. But if there is a resumption to 1920, you get a free look at Jim Boylan and the roster with this new, number one person in place, new head of basketball operations person in place. So that these are all only good things. So, look, I think the Bulls, I know they draw a lot of heat and every little move is a red button issue, and the fans are disgruntled. I get that. I think they've done this the right way. Michael's been out all year working on this, and now they've, I think, waited the proper amount of time, and they're moving forward on it. I think they're going to get this hire done. And now, look, obviously the most critical element is hiring the right guy. That's on them to do that.
Before we let you go, Casey, there will be some people out there that will look at this list and say, where is Sam Presti? Where is Masai Ujiri? Why are the Bulls going cheap? It's not as easy as that or as simple as that, is it?
It's not. I get that. I mean, look, the Cubs, and I can't remember Theo. Theo was a free agent, right? Was he a free agent?
They helped him spring him.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, the difference is there that the Theo Red Sox thing was frayed and on its last edges. But look, the Cubs went out and just threw a lot of money at the best, if not the best, 1A or one executive in the MLB. Right? They just went and got the best guy. So I understand that thinking. Now that said, what you allude to is also accurate. I don't see any scenario in which the Raptors let Masai Ujiri out of the contract without significant compensation. I do think the relationship with Sam Presti and his owner is such that if Sam wanted to pursue this opportunity, my sense is they'd be able to work something out. But he's got to want the opportunity, and then the Bulls are going to have to want to spend the money, which is historically they have not done that. So, it's a two-way street. It's got to work at both ends. Another guy that is very successful, makes a lot of money, is under contract, and we should emphasize that Masai and Sam are both under contract. Another guy would be Bob Myers from the Warriors. I mean, those are the big names. But look, as I said before, somebody I talked to from another executive from another team said, look, that's a great list. That's not a good list. That's a great list. I mean, they've targeted the right guys, just what making the right hire and getting permission to talk to them.
Great stuff, KC. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks,
KC. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it, man.
Take care. Yep.
Be safe. All right, that is Casey Johnson. We're gonna Biggs time next. We'll bring in Brad Biggs, and we'll talk about these conference calls. We'll talk about the quarterback battle and his take on what happened with Robert Quinn, and we'll ask him about the tight ends as well, because that was a subject we just haven't hit yet. But Biggs time next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.